Congressman Price, thank you for joining us today. We saw the post you published on Medium about your visit to the border and what you saw down there. Can you recount that for us, where you were and what you saw, what you took away from that?
I went to Brownsville and McAllen, both border towns that are experiencing a lot of pressure right now with the flow of migrants, especially from these Central American countries seeking asylum for the most part. And it's a flow that is involves, as we all know by now, lots of families or children, unaccompanied children even. And so it's not a security issue. It's a humanitarian issue and a question of how you deal with these people in a decent way in terms of the accommodations they need while waiting to be assigned. And then, of course, how expeditiously and fairly we dispose of their cases. And so this was much worse than anything I've ever seen. I think I talked to you about a year ago about my visit to Laredo, and I was alarmed about some aspects of that, especially the people stacked up in these processing centers at the border. But this is far worse. I mean, you have cell after cell of men, mainly in cells maybe built for five or six people with 40 people in there, cells for which the maximum stay is supposed to be 72 hours, where they're there for days, even weeks, the minimal personal hygiene conditions. It's just unacceptable. And then a little distance away from the border, I went to the so-called Ursula Processing Center, which has become notorious. This is where the families are, the women and children, unaccompanied children. This is somewhat better than the holding cells, but it still is cages. It's not nearly enough in the way of provision of hygiene. Not nearly enough in the way of provision for people to see medical providers when they need to, and people just there for days, weeks. Before they can have any kind of disposition of their case, and so it's a crisis of immediate accommodations for people, just humane conditions. It's a crisis of a policy breakdown, and one suspects some of that is deliberate with this administration, just slow walking these applications and denying people a timely hearing. And then, of course, beyond that, there's a crisis in these countries, which Donald Trump has only made worse by cutting off the very support for those countries, organizations in those countries, not the governments, but the non-governmental organizations that are dealing with the very conditions driving the migrants. Trump's approach is to punish those countries by cutting off that money, which is counterproductive in the extreme. So, overall, a very alarming situation, and one that I just don't trust this administration to address without a great deal of congressional pressure and certainly oversight so that we know what's going on.
Right now, it seems as though Republicans have stayed with the president on this in terms of policy. So what can Congress do to act on this if there is that split among votes there as well?
There are physical facility needs. There are also processing needs like judges and legal counsel. There's some of these things that we may be able to agree on. What is harder to get is to get at the oversight. We've Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, stiff-armed us on an attempt to put certain standards in place for these processing centers And, of course, the Republicans don't seem to be interested at all in the overall questions of immigration policy, whether it's the kind of random ICE raids we've seen in North Carolina or the stopping of the flow of refugees or Muslim ban, affecting certain countries or child separations. They have expressed some concern about, but it really is Democrats who are driving this this resistance to Trump's policies. This is worse than any administration I've ever served under, and so it does call on Congress, and I suppose it's especially Democrats in Congress who are going to have to be the eyes and ears of the nation here in terms of knowing what's going on, and also overseeing every dollar we send down there, because the trust level with this administration is extremely low.
How did this visit compare to that visit you talked to us about last year?
Much worse. Much worse. And it's not just that there are more people, although there are more people. It's also that the accommodations that those people need, and the policy changes to deal with especially the asylum claims, those processes are just broken. And what's more, there have been some new policies instituted that are actually making it worse, such as the Remain in Mexico policy, which has people staying on the Mexican side of the border without facilities, without protection for weeks on end, and not even able to register an asylum claim. That is surely in violation of U.S. Law. It's in violation of our values and the kind of refuge we have represented for people who genuinely need refuge. But I think a lot of this is under legal challenge and should be. And in the meantime, there's just a new effort every day by the Trump administration to restrict asylum claims or to somehow make this process more difficult.
Whenever reports come out, like the secretive Facebook group where those who were actually working on the border were making comments in that group thinking they were secret, how do you factor that into what you're trying to do in Congress?
It's certainly a troubling element. And, of course, it's not to say that the people on the front line are all mean-spirited or vulgar or dishonorable people, but certainly those Facebook posts indicate that some subset of them are, and that there's a culture there that needs to be rooted out. Our hearing yesterday did focus on this. At least the Democrats focused on it in a hearing with the Border Patrol director yesterday, and she's promising to eradicate this. She herself was a member of this Facebook group at one point, but I don't think she was involved in the distasteful posts. But she knows that she's got a problem, and it's a question of the agency's credibility and culture, and she has to get on top of it.
You mentioned that hearing, and of course there was another hearing getting a lot of attention with former special counsel Robert Mueller testifying before Congress. Were you keeping track of that, or were you, as Mueller did in a lot of instances, leaving it largely to the 400-plus page report that we've had for a little while?
Well, I was following it the best I could. I had a lot of other hearings and other things going on, but of course I saw it out of the corner of my eye. My staff saw it. I'm reviewing the reports, and of course reviewed the Mueller report itself, which is very, very damning. Reading the report or listening to Robert Mueller is not going to maybe tell you too much that's new. What it is going to do, though, is underscore the extent of the president's bad behavior and the extent of the efforts by him and others to lie about it and cover it up.
There's been a growing number of Democrats who are pushing for an opening of an impeachment inquiry. Have you made a decision on whether you would support that at this point?
That may be where we're heading. There's nothing that's going on right now that an impeachment inquiry would add to. I mean, the investigations that are going on now are exactly what they would be under an impeachment inquiry. The question may become, does an impeachment inquiry give us access to information, especially with the administration's stonewalling? Would an impeachment inquiry give us information that we don't now have? And then at some point, you know, do we switch into an impeachment mode as the most appropriate response to the president's misdeeds? There's no question about his misdeeds. And actually, before the Mueller report, I think we pretty much knew that this is a uniquely shameless and untrustworthy and unfit president. But the question of whether we go down that impeachment road and is one that I think is a pretty tough call, given this is a constitutional way that we can proceed and sometimes should proceed to deal with executive malfeasance. But we have not reached that point yet in terms of having to have this in order to get the information we need. But I think that point is coming quite soon. I don't think the Mueller testimony turned out to be a turning point in this regard. The Mueller testimony mainly stressed the things that we already knew about the president's misdeeds, the Russian misdeeds, and the president's denial of those and attempt to cover up his own misdeeds. And so hopefully the hearings yesterday introduced a broader public to what they need to know. But I don't think it it wasn't an inflection point in terms of the path toward impeachment.
I wanted to jump to the budget discussions as well. It seems like there's been a bit of a compromise reached there. What's your takeaway from what you've seen in that?
Well, I plan to vote for the budget agreement and am pleased that we have avoided the alternatives. I guess that's the way to put it. We don't need to shut the government down. We don't need to have a sequestration level of funding for all kinds of critical domestic investments. And we don't need a bunch of continuing resolutions to create uncertainty and take us into the fiscal year without without appropriations bills. And of course, there's still some work to do to avoid that and to make sure we have these bills passed on budget and on time. But this agreement sets the top line numbers. It gives both the Senate and the House numbers to work with, within which we then have to report appropriations bills. And we have limited time to do that. We've passed 10 out of the 12 bills here in the House. And my bill that I'm chairman of I'm chairman of the subcommittee was responsible for reporting, the transportation housing bill, I'm very proud of. I think it does a lot of what we promised to do in terms of investing in infrastructure and making affordable housing a front burner issue. This agreement will not accommodate everything we did in that bill, unfortunately, but it will accommodate a good bit of it. And as I said, it's much better than the alternatives, which would have just been disastrous in terms of our domestic investments.
Is there anything that people here in the 4th District should know that we maybe haven't been talking about as much as some of these other topics?
These are the topics that are on our hearts and minds right now. Certainly the situation at the border demands constant attention, and we're passing corrective legislation this week to just to lay out what we ought to be doing in terms of the conditions we impose down there. In the meantime, we got to do the oversight, do the visits, and keep a spotlight on that situation. The budget is fundamental to everything else, and I think we have made a positive step there. I'm very concerned about the international situation, this reckless blowing up of the Iran nuclear agreement, and now the uncertainty about what Donald Trump will do day to day on that and other international crises. It's a perilous time for our country. So we need to make a change at the top for sure, one way or the other. But in the meantime, I think the Article I branch of government, namely the one I serve in, has got to be upping. We've got to up our game. We've got to be more vigilant, more active, more assertive than we're accustomed to being, simply because of the challenge we face, a constitutional challenge and a challenge just of determining American policy.
North Carolina 4th District Congressman David Price, thank you very much.
Thank you.